Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from 970 ESPN and Steelers Nation Radio, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves chilling, talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. He's Dave Bryan of SteelersDepot.com, the place to get your latest and greatest Steelers information. I'm David Todd of ESPN Pittsburgh and the Steelers Radio Network. It's Season 7, Episode 50. Dave and the Steelers come away with another victory. This time they defeat the New York Giants at home, breaking a two-game losing streak at home. They win their third game in a row. They stay tied for the lead in the AFC North at 7-5 now on a three-game win streak. Was your takeaway this was a great performance, a good performance, or are you putting it in the same category of the last two wins, that it was a good enough performance, but we still don't know exactly who this team is?
David, I tell you what, I think the Steelers impressed the voters on this one, and I think they're going to be moving up in the BCS rankings. I think this was a quality win, and you know, kind of leave it at that. I mean, anytime, and I know we've talked about the two previous wins quite a bit, and who they played and who they beat, you know, in talking about in the Cleveland Browns and the Indianapolis Colts. The Colts obviously a wounded team, but anytime now that you go, you know, 3 weeks in the NFL and you hold your opponent to 14 points or less, you know, it is what it is. This is it. You're not playing Bowling Green here. You know, you're not playing, Appalachian State. These are NFL teams, so some credit has to be given there. Along with what they did on Sunday against, you know, we talked all last week about how this was a test, a good test for the Steelers, a measuring stick, if you will, and I think they passed it. Now, we're obviously going to go through this game and dissect it, and that's going to include picking out the good along with some of the bad. But, and in essence, that last – I don't even count that last touchdown. I mean, I know it counts on the scoreboard, but I mean, we all know why that happened, just not wanting to get beat deep, you know, let them march down there and burn off clock in the process. But, you know, in the last 3 weeks, they've allowed, what, 16 and 14?
30 points, yeah.
Yeah, even that's low enough, that's simple math for me.
I'm with you. I think this was an impressive win. I think there's still some questions about an offense that, you know, hurts itself, shot itself in the foot a couple times. You know, this isn't the high-flying offense we saw against Kansas City. Did some good things, was able to put the game away, and I think that was the most important thing. But they probably played a better defense than they've seen in a while, and they were able to move the football. I think moving the football on the ground in the fourth quarter and at the end of the first half, what they did, I thought was very impressive. The D continues to be better. And again, we can point to the moment that this thing changed, and whether the Steelers want to talk about it this way or not is fine, but it's when they started being much more aggressive and pressuring the quarterback with various blitz packages. And now, I think we saw Sean Davis's best game, clearly his best game. I think Mike Mitchell has been incredibly underrated, as we've talked about, in terms of how he's played over the last, you know, 4 to 6 weeks. Lawrence Timmons comes up with a big play, which I'm sure, well, I definitely heard about on Twitter, with him being on the field and making an interception. A lot of good things to take away. Not perfect, but if we continue to see the improvement that we've seen, you know, over the last 4 weeks in the defense, the offense continuing to come around, there's a little bit of a reason to start being excited about this team.
Yeah, I mean, this defense has come a long way. As we talked several weeks ago, okay, the young kids are playing. At the time, they were losing. and they're starting to play more. And then they won their last two, and we're talking about, well, the young kids continue to play, and they're making mistakes, but they're winning in the process, and that's going to be good for something. They're going to continue to play the rest of the season. I thought Sean Davis really really did have perhaps his best game of the season, or best game of his NFL career, for that matter. Who was Artie Burns and Lawrence Timmons, I think, led the team in tackles with seven, and I thought a few of Sean Davis's were the most impactful. I was joking on Twitter that Sean Davis should have volleyballed spiked that interception of his, but a guy has a chance to make his first career interception. He ended up having a nice return on it that ended up being called back. I mean, I'm not going to fault a guy for a game situation. I mean, look, you pick off a pass when you get a chance to pick off a pass, is my opinion, except if you're in the end zone and it's one of those Hail Marys, you just don't want that ball, that football bounce around. But I thought Sean Davis played perhaps his best game of the year. Even though Artie Burns had just one tackle for loss, and that's obvious. I mean, he's not going to get a lot of those, being as he doesn't play near the line of scrimmage. I wrote ahead of the game the big thing, one of the keys to the game when it came to the Steelers, and most notably with Odell Beckham Jr., was make sure you just tackle that guy right after the catch, because I think Odell Beckham Jr. came into the game with something like 5.4 yards average after the catch. I think roughly around a third of his receiving yards on this season have been after the catch. So that was the big thing. You knew you were going to go into this game not going to shut down Odell Beckham Jr. completely. The thing was is once he got his 7, 8, 9 catches, get him on the ground as soon as possible, and Artie Burns did that. And I thought Artie on one pass towards the I think it was towards the end zone, can't remember, first or second quarter, he played the boundary real well on that and used the field as an extra defender. I really liked that as well. So I thought all three rookies, even though we didn't get to see Javon Hargrave very long as he exited with a concussion, that was probably collectively I think that was collectively the best game those three players had.
You think it was the best game the defense played?
Going back to the game against the Chiefs, that's not fresh in my mind. But considering the quarterback, I think you have to use the quarterback as a measuring – the opposing quarterback as a measuring stick in this. So I would say probably yes. I mean, look, Eli Manning's no slouch, right? I mean, was Eli Manning great in this game? Did Eli Manning help the Steelers a little bit? Yes, but
he was not. In fact, I would argue he wasn't even good. But how much of that is the defense and the pressure that he faced?
Sure. We could get into the chicken and egg situation like that. But I think if you look at the opposing quarterback and you look at and look at their three wide receivers as well too. I mean, the Giants arguably probably have, I don't know, where would you rank the Giants' top three wide receivers league-wide?
Top five. I mean, I don't know that, hard to tell what the situation is with Victor Cruz, because the Giants have had games here over the even during this win streak where guys are invisible, where Sterling Shepard won't have a target or a catch. And obviously yesterday, Victor Cruz didn't have a target or a catch. So if every game you're only going to see two of the three guys, well, then you got to reevaluate how you evaluate them. But based on talent, I mean, we saw Odell Beckham Jr. do some amazing stuff in terms of just changing direction. We talk about how AB does that. I mean, OBJ kind of did a couple things in that game yesterday that were extraordinary, and he's obviously a great player. But they got to get more out of the other guys, and I don't know whether that's on scheme, whether that's on Eli making sure everybody gets involved, or what it was, but if you can close down one of the weapons and you can, make sure Odell Beckham Jr. isn't killing you, well, then that team's a lot easier to beat, because their O-line's average and their running game, I don't think their backs are as bad as everybody's making them out to be. I think Palmer, actually, the rookie out of UCLA, is not a terrible player. And if they get Shane Vereen back, that will help them. So, Maybe the Steelers got him at a good time. Who knows? But it's not an explosive offense. So I'll give a slight. I actually will give a slight edge to Andrew Luck and the Colts receivers. But it's top five or six.
Yeah, you know what? They need them. They need them at Ladarius Green.
They need Ladarius Green, right?
Yeah, I mean, really. But look, we came into this knowing that their running game and their offensive line, really not that threatening. But I mean, the receivers and the quarterback most definitely were, and I thought the Steelers did a good job of minimizing a lot of that. And as I mentioned, yeah, Eli Manning sure helped a little bit. Eric Flowers, look, I have never been an Eric Flowers fan since he came out. I think I stated that a few times. And the thing was I thought Debo was wearing him as a hat pretty well there for a while. But man, Eli just gets rid of the foot. You know, Eli makes such quick decisions. How many sacks could the Steelers have had in that game if it would have been any other quarterback except Eli Manning, you know?
Yeah, I mean, you know, he does. And when he's decisive, I thought he did a good job throwing the ball down the field some of the time. I mean, he made it look easy on that 20-yard out or whatever it was to Odell Beckham Jr. Some of the early throws I thought he made were good. He made some bad throws. The interception across his body, to the goal line was a terrible decision. He missed the receiver Adams deep when he had him early, and Will Gay kind of stumbled. That wasn't a good throw. I mean, he was erratic, and some of that was the pressure. And we talked about one of the things about, if you get a clean look, you get pressure on Eli, he's going to turtle, and much like Peyton did. And that's why. And this is not a condemnation of this tactic. I mean, that's why he's played 200 and however many games, 205, 206 games in a row, and is the third longest Ironman streak in NFL history, is because he's not taking the shot there. And that's the trade-off. You have Ben trying to make the play, which can happen sometimes and be game-changing, but you also have Ben taking the hit, and what can happen sometimes is you get injured. And it's not game-changing, it can be season-changing, or at least multiple game-changing if he can't play. So, I'm not suggesting one is definitely right or wrong, but you knew that was going to be the case. If you could get pressure on him, he was going to make quick decisions. Usually, mentally he's not going to make bad decisions, but he's not going to be able to extend plays and make plays.
You know, I was a bit surprised that they didn't try to attack the seams a little bit more than
the Giants.
Yeah, the Giants and what they did.
Yeah, they did some of the. I thought early in the game, through the first half, I thought they used the middle of the field well. But you're right, those were mostly crossing patterns. They had some mid-level crossing patterns to OBJ. And, if you're not going to use Victor Cruz there, where are you going to use him? That would be the ideal spot to be using him. So I'm with you. They should have continued to do that, maybe had some verticals in that area. But, your point about the tight end is correct, and that's a big deal that obviously on the Steelers side was a big deal.
As that game progressed a little bit too, and especially when I kind of made a mental note of it, which I make a lot of mental notes on a lot of things, so it ends up looking like a refrigerator with a bunch of those yellow postums all over it. But, boy, Eli in that game sure seemed like he liked his receivers college open. that was the thought that was running through my head. It didn't really seem like Eli – tried to thread. I guess what I'm trying to say is it didn't look like he tried to thread the needle that much overall in that game. But look, I mean, the Steelers' defense, played like they hoped to play, and that's stop the run, tackle the catch, and don't give up the big play. And I think Eli Manning. I think we're having to do our charting a little bit different now. So immediately after the game, I'm having to cobble some different things together. But I think I tabulated 4 deep throws by Eli in this game, and I think he completed just one of them, with one other ball being intercepted. So 1 of 4 on throws longer than 15 yards down the field. and one pick to boot. So as I mentioned, I thought, look, you know, the hidden yardage, I think when we go back through this thing, and I can't wait to get these details back from our charting as well too, what the actual yards after the catch was. The biggest gaffe I thought maybe in coverage was the pass to Will Tye in the first half. I'm still trying to figure out who to point the finger at. It looked like the Steelers were more in a quarters coverage in that situation, but nobody had the short area underneath when it came to Will Tye. And boy, Eli found him right in the middle of the field real quickly, and at least Sean Davis came up and was able to make the tackle to keep that
one. Oh, you know, good thing he got that shoestring tackle, because that was going to be at least 10 more if he didn't get him on the ground, and who knows what else more.
Yeah, that's one of those ones that you kind of can see quite a bit when they show you the end zone angle, but that's one of those ones that I think was obviously I don't know was, you know, I don't know if Sean Davis was supposed to come up a little bit a little less depth on that, being as how nothing was overloaded, you know, to his side, because really I think Will Tye, maybe one other receiver, was the only threat on that play. But you know, that was a coverage gaffe that I thought was obvious. As far as pressure goes, you know, it didn't feel, and you know, we'll see what the charting says, it didn't feel like they blitzed a whole heck of a lot. Now, we always have to redefine when we talk about blitzing. Are we talking about unexpected guys coming, or are we talking about Keith Butler blitzing, you know, when it's when it's five or more? And it just didn't feel like the Steelers had to do that a lot. It did feel like, though, however, that they were getting some what I'd call kind of semi-consistent pressure with whatever pass rush they did send. And as a note, I thought James Harrison, good game outside against Eric Flowers. Stephon Tuitt continues to be Stephon Tuitt. You want to talk about somebody that's going to get paid in a few months, it's Stephon Tuitt, and he's going to deserve every penny of it as well, too. You know, Dupree, okay. Chickalo, okay. Nothing to really get you excited on the other side over there, but there were times, though, that it did feel like the pressure came almost like a constrictor from all edges.
Yeah, excuse me. I thought they did. The guy who was, you know, quiet in this game, aside from making the play on the fourth down in the end zone, was Ryan Shazier. He was not as visible as we've seen him in past weeks. But you know, I'm with you. It's a game where the Steelers controlled the run game from the get go. The Giants had two kind of, you know, reasonably long runs, one early and one late, but they weren't able to move the ball on the ground. We knew that was something that was probably going to be the case. You know, they didn't abandon the run, but you know, the Steelers closed them down. And again, if you just think about it, they got the Giants came in with the lowest third down conversion percentage in the NFL, and in this at 33% roughly. And in this one, they went 4 for 11. And then you throw in the fact that they went 0 for 3 on fourth down, and you get something like, you know, they end up at like 28%. In terms of 4 for 14, so right on par. The defense got, you know, kept them low conversions on third and fourth down. They got a safety. They got three ball possessions with the fourth down stops. They got two sacks. They got two interceptions. I think they had, you know, five or six tackles for loss. As a group, they really did fill the stat sheet. I don't think they had too many explosive plays. I will say that the touchdown that the Giants scored, the second touchdown, was great play design to set that up. Eli threw it to a spot. I don't know if they ended up running a bit of a pick in the end zone for Shepard to blow open in the corner there in the last 30 seconds or whatever it was. But just in control the whole game, and they made plays when they had to, and then throw on the safety on top of that. And then again, you know, Timmons' interception. You know, we'll talk about the two interceptions. Timmons' interception, great stuff. I don't think it changes my thought on, you know, when Timmons should be on the field. When you're down in the red zone in that area, it's a whole different type of thing you're doing. You remember when they got the safety, Timmons, the Steelers were playing zone on that play as well, and it was a third and long situation, and OBJ's running a shallow cross, And if you go back and look at it, and if you saw the flag, you know, maybe you weren't paying attention to what happened with OBJ, but if you were watching on television, you probably saw it, is, you know, he gets by those guys, he goes around the corner, and he puts the ball out in front of the yard marker. And it would have been very interesting to see if he actually got the first down on that, on a play that looked like there was no chance he would get the first down. So it's different in that area than when you're around the goal line, and the setup there was different. You know, we can debate whether they baited Eli into the throw or whether he made a good throw, but we've seen Timmons make that type of play. He made it against Kansas City in a Monday night game a bunch of years ago to get a victory in overtime. He is still athletic. He showed, as you said on Twitter, Dave, he showed great straight line speed. Yeah, you know, you're not asking him to run 100 yards, but he was motoring down that sideline for a while, and it was pretty impressive. I mean, I think Shazier was the one who said, you know, I couldn't catch up to him to throw a block. And I'll tell you a funny anecdote that Charlie related to me last night, which I assume is true. I said, you know what was funny about that is none of the DBs or anybody were asking for the football once Timmons started running. Because, you know, that happens all the time in, you know, on defenses when guys, you know, guys who perceive themselves as faster want the ball. And he said in a meeting room with the on the defense, they have instituted a rule that if guys ask for the football, they get fined because it's selfish. He said they go out and the job now is don't worry about getting the football. Go block for the guy who made the play and get something done. So that was it. I had never heard that before, and I was laughing just kind of as Charlie told me, thinking about kind of what that must be like in the meeting room when that happens, and the conversations they must have, given each other a hard time. But it was certainly a very athletic, and, you know, if you're going to pick one play out of the game, maybe as important as any.
Yeah, I was hoping, you know, I was thinking last night, boy, I wonder how you're going to address that elephant in the room named Mr. Timmons when we got to this part.
Oh, yeah, look, I'm all for it. And I've been saying in the past couple of weeks, Timmons playing around the line of scrimmage is playing great, attacking the quarterback, doing those types of things. And I don't blame Lawrence Timmons for not being able to cover T.Y. Hilton or Odell Beckham Jr. And if there's a play on first down where the other team schemes, where they, like the Steelers try to do with Le'Veon Bell, well, then good for the other team. It's just an obvious long down and distance passing situations. I think the Steelers have some other options that they can go to. But credit to Timmons on that play. It was a zone set up, you know, near the red zone or in the red zone, making a play around the goal line where you have you're doing, guys are running less crossing patterns in that area because there's so many defenders around that you're it's tougher to kind of, you just don't have the space to operate. So in that situation, all for it. He made the play.
Yeah, I'll defend you a little bit here. It looked like quarters coverage on that with zone underneath. It looked like Eli. And you're right. You know, the ball, I think, was at the 9-yard line. So you're working in a constricted area right there, which is a little bit to your advantage first off there. But it looked like Eli was so concerned with trying to freeze Mike Mitchell, you know, trying to stare a hole through him, you know, in the middle quarter of the field, that he just didn't realize how wide and, you know, it's hard to say how deep because you're only talking about 9 yards from the goal line and then, you know, another 10 yards on top of that. So, you look, you know, not a lot of ground for Timmons to have to get deep in. But Timmons did widen a little bit on that. And make no mistake, Larry, you know, you go back, you want to talk about a chicken and egg, and this drove me crazy thinking about this, the what-if scenario here. Eli admitted that it surprised him a little bit, maybe how Timmons got wide on that play. Larry Donald, though, it's a simple seam route, you know, right up the seam there, and Donald's open, and Eli's trying to go back shoulder with that throw, and you think to yourself, well, if Eli puts a little bit more air up underneath that ball, That's an easy six. But then you think about, well, if he puts a little bit more air under that ball, then that gives Mike Mitchell 3/4 of a second to get there to deliver. And if you go back and watch the tail end of that, Mitchell Mitchell already gets kind of a shoulder into Larry Donnell, even though the ball never makes it to him. So you start thinking, okay, well, if a little bit more air is underneath that ball, does Mitchell get there and knock that thing out in the end zone as well, too? So, look, I mean, Lawrence Timmons got some air on that on his own. He made a nice interception, and as you mentioned, boy, he and I've mentioned this for quite a while now. Timmons, point A to point B, running north-south, he can get there in a hurry still. The thing is how he moves kind of laterally at this point of his career and having to drop deep and run with players there. But tip of the cap to Lawrence Timmons because, look, I mean, the Steelers were up 5-0 in the top of the third and – you know, a touchdown there, and you're obviously changes the complexion of what had happened so far through what a quarter and a half. You know, at that point, so the Steelers actually took that turnover and turned it into seven of their own or six of their own real quick as well.
They did, and so let's. is there anything else defensively that on top of your mind in terms of? A player that, again, just Mike Mitchell. Somebody, you asked me, Dave, if you could take one player from the Steelers secondary on another team and put him in the lineup right away, and I said Mike Mitchell, and some people came at me on Twitter, you know, saying, you know, I don't know anything about football, blah blah blah. Not the constructive dialogue, the you're a moron dialogue, and I will stand vindicated by my decision.
Yeah, and look, I mean, that hit that he was originally flagged for in the game, and they picked that up and tip of the cap to the officials for getting that right. He doesn't know where that ball's going. He has every right, in my opinion, to hit that receiver. Of course, pretty soon the rules officials.
Who did you think Eli was throwing to, the front receiver or the deep receiver?
Well, I thought the deep one, but how does, you know, Mike Mitchell has an argument there, you know, I think.
Oh, yeah, no, I'm asking you. Because I haven't seen the play enough. I'm just asking your sense of who he was actually picking out.
Yeah, I think the TV angle sometimes, as much as we like the all-22 in the end zone, sometimes it gives you a little bit better sense, you know, on who's being thrown to in that situation. But I don't fault Mitchell at all for making that hit. How long before they take that kind of hit away, though, you know? Is the first thing that ran through my mind. I'm glad the officiating crew got it right. But look, Mitchell's a people started to go ballistic right when when that flag was thrown. They were just itching to get on Mitchell in that situation. But look, he's an intimidating force back there. He likes to hit and. Yeah, it's still we talked what a week or so ago about, you know, how much does that linger in when other receivers are watching that on tape prior to the game? How you know, does that linger in their minds when they think about going over the middle to make a catch there? So, defensively, otherwise, I think we need to reiterate because, you know, been hard on a few of the rookies, especially Artie Burns as of late. I thought that was already quite possibly Artie Burns' most complete game, most consistent game to date. And that was even with him having a penalty in there. That was with him even giving up some receptions in the game. You're not going to shut out some of these receivers across the league, you know, these days. So it's very important that you be physical with them and you get them on the ground. And then on top of that, early in the game, we saw Artie come up and make a nice, open, physical one-on-one tackle on top of that. And I posted that on Twitter first thing this morning and how refreshing that is to see, because there's one thing that when you think about Steelers and defensive backs, well, two things. They can't catch the football usually. And the other thing is how physical they are when they come up to make tackles on either runs or short passes. And I thought Artie did that. So consider that a huge test pass for Artie, and as you mentioned, Sean Davis played well. Thought the whole secondary, for the most part, played well, and the defense overall. Heck, when you hold a team like the Giants to 14 points, you get a couple of turnovers and you get a couple of sacks against them. You have to take your hat off and hand it to them as well.
I'll tell you something that was funny is, you know, for the 2+ hours we were on the postgame show, we didn't really talk about Ben Roethlisberger until there were about 5 minutes left, and I'm not sure we'll have much more to add in this one. When you get to the offensive side, obviously the big story is Ladarius Green. And, you know, I've been in the corner that this guy is going to be a big contributor down the stretch, and I was thrilled to see what he did. You had the first play we'll get to the drops, but you had the first play early where he turns on the linebacker Kennard when Ben's scrambling, and again kind of just lay it out there, drop it in the bucket. And, Dave, I'll tell you, it looks so effortless for him to make that catch and run. He stumbled a little bit while he ran with the football, but he looks really good receiving that type of ball over his shoulder. And that's a little bit kind of the ball he got on the touchdown as well. So he can run that pattern and looks good doing it. Ben looked for him. I don't know if there's been a game this year where Antonio Brown was not the most targeted guy. And if there was, you know, he was close. There might have been Le'Veon Bell had more one game. But, I mean, it was clear Le'Veon Bell had 11 targets in this game. He was the guy Ben was looking for. He looked for him in the middle of the field in some crossing patterns. He looked for him at the sticks in the middle of the field. And then he looked for him, you know, up the seam a couple times. And this is a different dimension. And we've talked about how if they get back Coates or DHB and they can stretch the field, well, it looks like they might have found the guy to at least run the seam. And, you know, still in my book, not enough of Eli Rogers. But if you're using both those guys to work the middle of the field, awfully good.
Yeah, and Alex has a great breakdown this morning on how, the Steelers did a good job to set up, and we mentioned this time, and, it seemed like every 4 weeks on the podcast, Dave, when people get so upset at Todd Haley and play calling. A lot of times, you're calling some things to set up other things to see how teams respond to it. And I thought Todd Haley did last night there was like two Twitter followers just all wanted me to break down Todd Haley and the awful play calling in this game against the Giants. And I'm thinking, I'm not seeing a problem with the play calling in this, and I know it's frustrating to see all these bubble screens and these tunnel screens and all like that, but they use that to kind of suck the opposing defense in, and they did it yesterday. And I thought even early, because remember all the short behind the line of scrimmage passes that the Steelers had, what, in those
first drive, 5 passes, none of them more than 5 yards.
Right, and that I know that irritates several in the fan base, but then of course, look, I mean, are you going to fault the play call on that short third down play that Jesse James fought the football like it owed him money? I mean, that was a flat out ugly drop that should have been a first down. But here's what the Steelers did: they came back on that next possession there, and they kind of threw the fake. They fake the bubble screen.
Yes.
Screen, yeah. And then Jesse James releases up the field and is wide. You want to talk about Ben Roethlisberger like a guy's college open? It don't get no more college open than that. And
that's the play. I used to love that play when they'd fake that out there and Heath would go out there faking the block, and that's a version of that play. It's great to keep defenses honest, and they never, because the bubble screen is run, the wide receiver screens run so often. It's hard to account for that, to assume the guy's going to slip the block on you. And so that was, I love that play design. Both times you had that drop and Ben went right back to him. You had the Ladarius Green drop next possession, first play, Ben went right back to him. So we saw that stuff. And Dave, just talking about those little passes, I was thinking about you on the two plays that the Steelers ran in the last drive of the first half where they had 3rd and 17. And I know, you get annoyed when guys don't throw to the sticks. And I know that's more in a 3rd and 7 or 8 situation than a 3rd and 17 situation. But they ran the screen to Eli Rogers. And how elusive did he look running the ball? And then they get the penalty, and they got a 3rd and 16. And Le'Veon Bell, they run a similar play. and he goes crazy and just misses getting the first down. So some interesting. I thought the play design was fine. I didn't have a problem with it.
Yeah, and boy, I'm looking at the overhead shot that Alex has up in his post on Ladarius Green and Landon Collins bites hard on that bubble screen, and just Ladarius just runs right past him. So, you know, I guess my message is while games are going on, to listeners, you know, try to pick up if you can of what's being run and how it might be being used to set something up later on in the game. And there was just no better case of that than what the Steelers did with these early screens in this one, and it ended up being an easy touchdown for Ladarius Green. And on the other long pass that Ladarius had, Ladarius was slowly starting to figure out how to play backyard football. Okay, Ben's, you know, when Ben retires, he should release some sort of game, Ben's Backyard Footballs, you know, something like that, because, you know, one of these days during the offseason, I'm going to go back through a full season and see how long, see on instances that Ben holds the football 4 seconds or longer, how many of those end up in sacks, how many of those end up in explosive plays, and how many are intercepted. I think that would be an entertaining breakdown. But Ladarius Green was coming across, and Ben, you know, the first couple reads weren't there. Ben holding the football and had time, and you could see Ben starting to point off. Hey, Ladarius, you go long. And that's, you know, Green turned it up, and when you get him one-on-one in a linebacker in that situation, who is it, Kennard, I think.
Kennard.
That's such a fair mismatch. I mean, I know Giants fans probably this morning, a good section of them are all over Kennard, but that's a lot to ask in that situation. And you know, Ladarius turned it up and was wide open in that play. But I can't keep but go back, and I wrote this on Twitter again last night. Man, what can this offense be if they got a guy like Sammy Coates back? You know, back going again, and I hate to beat the dead horse, and I don't know at this point, David. Are we going to find out after the season that Sammy Coates needed both fingers amputated and steel rods put in there to replace them? And I mean, are we talking about an injury that's going to need a big surgery after the season, and we're going to find out that Sammy just, you know, really couldn't play with that hand? Are we gonna find out that, man, Sammy Coates just struggles with his playbook, and that's the only route that he can run is the nine? You know,
it's a great question. It's one I've been asking for weeks, and I'll ask it at the end of the season or in the off season about, you know, playing special teams. I don't. Supposedly Sammy Coates at practice looks fine catching the football, particularly over his shoulder. If you're really trying to get him healthy and want to see what he can do, I don't understand. Now, maybe you deem him more valuable now on special teams than you do at wide receiver, which would be saying volumes. But I still don't understand. You know, he's using his hands on special teams, right? Isn't there a chance of re-injury? So I don't, you know, I've asked the question. I haven't gotten an answer other than no. I mean, Mike specifically said, no, we wouldn't put him out there if that was the case. So I don't know, but the fact that Kobe Hamilton is the clear number two receiver right now is interesting. And the fact that Darius Heyward-Bey was the clear number two receiver is interesting. The Steelers have gone through every receiver on their roster, you know, capable of being that guy as that guy. So I don't know what to add. It's one of the big mysteries of this team. And if this offense is going to be all that, if it's going to be, you know, everything, the best offense in the NFL, which I think it has the capability of being, I still think Sammy Coates is going to have to be part of it.
Well, you know, after the first, you know, people, the initial narrative after those first five games was, boy, the Steelers sure do miss Martavis Bryant. Well, they miss Martavis Bryant because they miss Sammy Coates. I mean, this is Sammy,
You mean since the first five games? Yeah,
since the first five games, the narrative has been, boy, the Steelers miss Martavis Bryant. Well, they miss Martavis Bryant because they miss Sammy Coates. And would it be great to have Martavis right now? You damn right it would. Most definitely. Heck, I miss Darius Hayward Bay right now. For that matter, and he's probably going to be 50-50 when you throw it deep to him anyway. So 50-50 divided into the 50-50 chance that you have, you probably have a quarter of a chance to, I don't know, it might be some bad Monday math there, but you get what I'm saying. And the thing is with Sammy now, man, back to only playing, what did he play, four snaps in this game?
Did he get four?
Yeah, I think four offensive snaps in this game against the Giants, no targets in this game. And, you know, we talked on the podcast last week. I thought, man, get Sammy Coates out there early and throw him a butt. Look, you could have accomplished a lot of things had you listened to offensive coordinator Dave on this one. You could have accomplished the bubble screen that you wanted to establish early, and you could have got Sammy Coates involved in the game early as well, too, with a high percentage pass. So it really makes you wonder what's going on there. If Todd Haley, if Mike Tomlin continues to say, well, this is something the guy should be turning the corner with, and Todd Haley says, you know, this is just a mental thing of catching the football now. They keep throwing him out there on special teams. He played 16 special team snaps in this game, and I think the only guy that played more special team snaps than him was Roosevelt Nix, David. So, you know, he's healthy enough to do that. And look, I'm not beating on Kobe Hamilton here. Kobe Hamilton is what Kobe Hamilton is. And by the way, Kobe Hamilton.
But would he have two targets? I don't have it in front
of me. Yeah, I think two targets in there. One of those was another key. He had three targets, two receptions for 11 yards, and one of those was another key third down reception. I think I had researched coming into this game that Kobe Hamilton had five of his catches so far this season have come on third down. I think four of those had moved the chains. So, you know, now add another third down conversion to him. But he's not a guy that you're going to line up, you know, wide and ask to beat somebody down the field. And we talked about that quite a bit. It sure would be nice if they had a guy like Coates or and who knows how long it's going to be before Darius Hayward Bay is back. That could just give you that legitimate stretch to bite off 45 yards at a chunk.
No doubt. So what'd you think of Le'Veon Bell's game? And let me ask you this. Le'Veon Bell had 867 touches up until week five or six this year, maybe the New England game, when he fumbled for the first time since his rookie year, when he fumbled once against, I think it was Green Bay, and he lost the ball. So between receiving and rushing the ball, 867 touches with one career fumble. He now has four fumbles in the last six games. Now, the one in this game is the first one he's lost. But as we know, fumble recoveries are relatively random. So that shouldn't be kind of meaningful whether he lost it or not. Do you have any level of concern that he went 867 with one and now he's gone, you know, 150 with four?
I think it's obvious that there's some level of concern of him holding on to the football now, but maybe it's just the kind of the law of averages catching.
Well, which is a fair answer.
I don't know. If I go to casinos, David, I like to play. I like to play sometimes the worst one of the games in there that gives you the worst odds, and that's Keno, because I think sooner or later this group of four numbers is going to hit. You know, even though mathematically you have the same chance to to not hit as you do. You know, every game's a new random situation, and I guess. To some degree, you know, of course, some runs to the outside, maybe less risk of fumbling the football than an inside with the sea of hands and all like that. I'm not overly concerned about it, to be honest with you. I would like it to stop, but I'm not to the point where I want Le'Veon Bell to walk around all week with a bag of sugar or something that teammates have to try to knock it out of his hand all throughout the week, through the meeting rooms. I'm not to that point yet. But it is a little bit concerning. I mean, turnovers in general are concerning. But, he was going down, and it's really kind of hard to see how that ball gets knocked out, to be quite honest with you. So hopefully it comes to an end soon.
Okay, so what did you think of his game? 36 touches. One of the things we never talked about was the halfback option pass that they ran down near the red zone. And I give Le'Veon Bell a plus and a minus. I'll give him a B minus on the play. I give him a plus in that his first look, he didn't see the guy he wanted, and it didn't seem to work out just right. And he did a very good job, which a lot of guys don't do, of quickly just getting rid of the ball and not making anything bad happen on the play. What I want to watch again when I see the play is I want to see the Eli Rogers, and I don't know if you ever got to see this on TV because in the stadium you could see this. Eli Rogers breaks free up the middle and he is wide open. But I wouldn't expect with Le'Veon Bell running to his right that Eli Rogers running the pattern he was running would be his first target because it's a little bit of a throw across his body, a little bit more than you would like. So unless he got a chance to really plant and throw, that seemed odd to me. What was your take on the play?
Yeah, and I don't think we can make a judgment on that play until we look at the all 22. because can you really tell on the TV angle? What kind of window he's throwing into? I don't believe you could you?
Well, for me it was the stadium angle, so I had a better look,
okay,
I'm
well,
sure.
that's correct. I mean, you had the ultimate all 22, but I would like to see. I can't offer you an opinion on that because I don't have enough information on it. Ask me here in another on Wednesday when the all 22's out to go.
Okay, so what would you think of his game? We had another game where it was kind of just ironic in terms of the numbers that you've got his third straight game without a carry of 12 yards, and then he gashes one for 19 and he gashes another one for 12 right behind it. And I thought it was very impressive when the Steelers were trying to put the game away, as I mentioned earlier, that they were able to run the football. When it's funny because, Dave, when Bell is doing his hesitation at the line of scrimmage, I'm sure you get the same thing. I get, countless tweets complaining about Bell and his style and the fact that, they wish D'Angelo Williams was in there. Look, he is what he is as a runner. He's leading the league in yards per game from scrimmage at 146, ahead of David Johnson at 142, ahead of Ezekiel Elliott at 133, and ahead of everybody else who's less than 110. He's averaging 90 yards a game on the ground. It's hard for me to find a lot of fault in what Le'Veon Bell's doing.
Yeah, this is an instance where show me the baby. Don't tell me about the labor pains. And it does feel like labor pains at sometimes when Le'Veon does. it literally. How did Aikman describe this? Describe it during the game.
I don't get that feed.
Painfully, or I forget the word that he said. Painfully indecisive. I forget what he said there. But yeah, there are times where you're thinking, man, just hit the damn hole. And then there's other times when you if you go back through and you watch all 22 from the end zone level, that you say, well, a lot of times this offensive line isn't giving him. Giving him holes to drive a truck through either, So he is having to pick and choose and wait quite a bit, especially you're running a lot of those, as Tunch Yoka likes to call them, those 14 straights and those 17 straights, that they oftentimes try to run there. So No, look, look at the end result. That's all I can, all I have to say. And especially using him out of the backfield is really, really where his worth, in my opinion, because he can make so much happen out there in open space. And let's not forget that this is, and I said this last week on the podcast. This is, you know, they faced the Giants team that heading into last night had only allowed one running back in the league to have 100 yards or more from scrimmage, and that one running back was Terrence West, and you know, Le'Veon Bell almost had 100 yards. What he had, like 77 yards in the first half yards from scrimmage, so you knew at that point he was probably going to go over the 100 yard mark easily. So it just one more thing that defenses have to worry about, and Le'Veon Bell normally produces. Would I like to start seeing the explosive runs of more than 20 yards? Yes, but and hopefully those will come. But you know, look, he's getting the job done regardless. He's earning every yard that he gets on the ground this year.
Yeah, I agree with that. He is earning the yards on the ground. And you know, I think he had a good game, not a spectacular game. The fumble's certainly a negative. You know, that's just I'm not concerned about it like you. I don't think it's anything where I decrease his number of touches. We got asked in the postgame, are you worried about wearing Le'Veon Bell out? And Mike Tomlin has said repeatedly during his tenure as head coach, I'm going to run this guy till the wheels come off. And he's done that. I have zero problem with that, Dave. If you know, this game was in doubt until the Steelers kicked the field goal at 21-7. So, you know, give Le'Veon Bell the touches. He missed the first three games of the season. He's healthy. I don't know that, you know, on his 33rd touch in a game, he's more likely to get injured. Now, it certainly looked, you know, a couple of those plays late that the Giants were going to bend him in half. So you've got that to deal with. But the game, to me, wasn't over at that point. And I don't have any problem with his usage level to this point. Do you?
No, not at all. You know, look, my thought on the situation is when it comes to his contract as well, too, unless he's willing to give you a heck of a discount when it comes to not so much the yearly average, but the guaranteed money, you might just want to go $12 million a year with this guy on a year-to-year basis and run him every year like it's going to be his last. You know, that's why in today's NFL, I think that might be the best way to use running backs. It'll be interesting. Look, you slap the franchise tag on, you know, barring an injury now, between now and the end of the season, you just, you know, slap the franchise tag on Le'Veon Bell, and if you can't get a reasonable guaranteed money deal worked out with him, then you just go year to year with him until he can't play anymore. And so I don't think you can play for next year with players. I mean, this is, you know, things can happen. Look at what happened in that game last night in the Seahawks with the busted leg for Earl Thomas. You have to play every game like you're trying to win it, and if that means using your running back over 30, you know, giving them 30 touches a game, then that's what you have to do to win that game. I don't think you can try to look terribly long. Now obviously late in games, do you want to get your guy out of there if possible and get a guy like D'Angelo Williams or Fitzgerald Toussaint in the game? Yes, but if Le'Veon Bell's your best player to have out there in certain situations, you got to have him out there regardless of usage.
Okay, Dave, I don't want us to go too long, but I want to hit on, you know, three or four quick topics here. You know, again, we haven't hit on Antonio Brown or Ben Roethlisberger at all so far, but let's say a couple things. One is 12 penalties, a lot of them on special teams. Are the Steelers an undisciplined team, or is this exactly what Mike Tomlin's referring to when he talks about popcorn, in saying you've got, you know, 40 guys, let's say, who are, you know, 15 of them are playing 10 or 15 snaps a game, and the rest of them are playing somewhere between 20 and 60 snaps a game. And if 10 of those guys make one mistake on a quarter of the plays they're in, then you're going to get a lot of penalties. And it's not doesn't mean the team's undisciplined. It means guys got to concentrate more. I mean, Le'Veon Bell had his second false start in 3 weeks. It's kind of inexcusable. Do you think this reflects poorly on the coaching staff, on the players? Do you think it is a big problem, or do you think there's, you know, some weeks it happens, some weeks it doesn't, you live with it?
Yeah, you know, the pre-snap penalties are definitely tough to swallow. The hook, you know, look, does David Johnson go out there and hook a guy on a counter because he's not coached well? Or is it just him trying to make a play and he got caught, you know? The hook on David DeCastro is another one that you could kind of question, you know? Was that a legitimate penalty? The guy's trying – those kind of holding plays, you know, with guys moving out in space, you know, how many things can you try to coach during a week anyway? I mean, do you have to have a long sheet that you go over, you know, rattle off 150 things? You know, do not hook on counterplay. That's number one. You know, and then just roll down the list. I don't, in situations like that, I think it's just execution failures of players trying to make plays. You know, you'd like to see people hold their water better on some of these false starts. That's for sure. It's just overall frustrating, David. It seems like you can't get out of the first half sometimes with six offensive penalties, and boy, when you add in the drops on top of it, yeah, it felt like the Steelers were running out of feet real quick early on in this game, and penalties and drops are going to happen. Just, I guess the biggest thing is you just don't want to see them come in bunches as much.
Yeah, okay. The squib kick late in the game, the Giants' best return by far comes off that squib kick. Is there anything proven that, you know, you squib kick and the team's less likely to take one back to the house or have a big return than kicking it deep? It certainly doesn't seem that way to me.
With a squib kick? Yeah. I haven't spent a lot of time thinking about that one, to be honest with you. Speaking of kicking, what about Randy? What about Fat Randy?
Yeah, and let me get something in here before we get to Randy. The mortgage process sometimes can be more challenging than spelling Roethlisberger. Let our buddy Craig Oxane guide you through this sometimes daunting mortgage process to help you score the home of your dreams, even in Buffalo. If you're considering buying or refinancing a home now or in the future, please give Craig Oxane a call. He's an experienced, nationally recognized lender that can help you achieve the dream of home ownership. Call Craig Oxane today at 855-961-7763. That's 855-961-7763. Email Craig at craig@blackandgoldlending.com or apply online at www.blackandgoldlending.com. First Advantage Mortgage Company, NMLS 2551, NMLS 320399, Illinois Residential Mortgage Licensee, Equal Housing Lender. Yes, we did get a surprise piece of news on Saturday about the Steelers and their kicking situation and Randy Bullock being signed. And, you know, Randy Bullock was on the Giants roster on opening day, and he's out of a job, and he goes out. And I was told by – I think Ed Bouchette actually tweeted just an hour before inactives were announced that Bullock wasn't going to be the guy. It was going to be Boswell. So he was going to get $75,000 for basically doing nothing. But it was Bullock, which, you know, I can't evaluate whether Boswell could or should have kicked. But it certainly worked out well. He kicked off pretty well, and he hit his three field goals. So, hey, nice job by him.
Yeah, and we passed along that news from Ed Bouchette pregame as well, too. Ed tweeted out that appears he had overcame his abdominal injury. And, you know, obviously whenever you pass along a report like that and it doesn't come true, then it's Steelers Depot that was wrong with the report.
Right.
You know, in situations like that. Look, we just pass it along, folks. But I have made a lot of fun of Randy Bullock so far during his career. A lot on Twitter. You know, and I was nervous when I found out that when the news came out Saturday that Randy was signed, and all three times that Randy went out there to kick field goals, I wasn't sure what the result was going to be. But
right, and you probably wouldn't be the next five times.
No,
either.
I wouldn't. But look, he was here. Here's one thing about Bullock. I think you go back to the game 2014, the Texans game at Heinz Field. Bullock, I think, was 3 for 3 on field goals in that game. None of them, to my memory, were extremely long, and I think he kicked
all mid 31, 38, 39, I think.
Yeah, and I think both extra points in that game as well, too. So 30 to 39, Randy, he's our man. You know, but I wouldn't.
Well, he went 40. He went 44 yesterday. So we'll
yeah,
give him that.
But I wouldn't roll that. I wouldn't roll that set of dice.
You don't think our boy Boz is getting Wally?
No. I think Boswell's roster spot is safe right now for sure. But the thing is, you know, look. You get a guy in a pinch like that. I'm not even sure Mike Tomlin knew what he had at that point. You know, you just get a guy you think that's kicked, that's used to being in the situation, and you cross your finger. I mean, there's a reason Randy Bullock didn't have a job come Saturday, right? You know,
no doubt. So let me ask you about that, because I think that leads to a very interesting question that I'm going to ask Mike tomorrow. And I'll preface this by saying I said what I would do before this play, but I thought it was a coin flip. And that was, Dave, the fourth down play with, you know, just over 2 minutes to go. The Giants had all their timeouts, and the Steelers have a fourth and two, I think, from the 28. And do you want to kick a 45 or 46 yard field goal, or do you want to go for the fourth and two? And the result, if you miss, is effectively the same. It's 21-7, and you're going to give up the ball. And in one case, you're going to give it up 7 or 8 yards further downfield, you know. But in the bigger picture, that's not particularly significant. And in my mind, the result, if you make it, is largely the same, because on either one. Because if you make the field goal, well, you're up three scores and the game's over. And if you get the first down, you're basically going to be able to run out the clock or close to it, and the game's over. So I said I would probably go for it, and the reason I did is probably maybe the reason you would too, is because it was Bullock and not Boz. If it was Boz, I might have kicked it, but this is a decision where I'm interested to hear what Mike's thoughts were, because I have no view before or after if there was a right decision.
Yeah, you might have to get your probability buddy involved in that one, Brian Burke, but.
Did you like the decision
to
go for it?
Yeah, I had no issue with it. Look, I mean,
They end up getting stopped and they kicked the field goal anyway afterwards.
Man, I love nothing more than grinding out that last, you know, those 4 or 5 minutes to end games. But there's
at the end of the first half and
right,
the end of the
right,
second half.
You know, there's no better feeling than doing that and taking all the time off in the process and just, you know. Love that. Yeah, I had no issue with that. Boy, the Steelers 0-for-3 defending fourth downs in this game. The Steelers, on the other hand, were 1-for-1 on fourth down. A Giants team that has struggled in situations on the road on third down. We're 4-for-11 on third downs in this game. So props to the Steelers defense in that situation. And red zone, as far as red zone goes, this was a Giants team that on the road came in with something like a 76% or 77% red zone efficiency on the road, talking about their offense. And the Steelers held them, 2-for-4? I think 500 in those situations, and wasn't one of those situations late, so wasn't it like 33% heading into that, you know, that late kind of meaningless fantasy score, if you will. So, yeah, you know, say bend, they sure do bend a lot on defense, but in lieu of maybe getting lucky in the red zone like they did against the Colts a few times, they made their own plays, I thought, in the red zone this time. What did Mike Tomlin say this past week? Sometimes it's good to be fortunate or whatnot. Well,
Yes, yes.
They did need that fortune this week overall.
Yeah, so Shazier made the play in the red zone. A couple other quick things. One, the outside linebacker rotation. How many plays at the end of the day did Jarvis get?
Yes.
I mean, I was surprised he got plays late in the game.
12 defensive snaps in total, and a lot of those came late.
But they came late and they mattered. It wasn't just the last series. So, but that was interesting how they did that in terms of the rotation. You know, Ben and AB, we've done an hour podcast. We didn't mention them. Both had, you know, fine games. Nothing out of the ordinary. Not bad. Just kind of fine.
Yeah, I mean, boy, Antonio continues to make plays on that one in the end zone. I wasn't sure Ben. When Ben threw that, I thought it was going to get picked off because I thought. I thought that Leon Hall was more in the vicinity than what he was, as replay showed. But that's just Ben being Ben, getting outside the pocket, making something happen, and A.B. making a tremendous catch and getting his feet down. A.B. along the sideline on one of those plays. Ronald pulled a Ronald toe tap.
Oh, great getting his feet down on that one. That was
yeah,
crazy
Ronald
good.
Toe tap. I don't know. I guess we're becoming spoiled that he makes great plays week in and week out. We fail to mention half of them. So probably shouldn't take that for granted. And Ben, look, we joke about him all the time, like in guys' college open. But boy, he sure can find he sure can give those guys time to get college open. On top of the interception to Eli Rogers, a little bit of a forced football. I don't think I put that a lot on Eli Rogers. That's kind of tough. You know, already, you know, I know people want him to come back and fight for the football a little bit harder, but
Ben underthrew it, and he should have fought a little bit harder if he could have cut his route a little bit more, angled it a little bit more. But, yeah, you know, the defender made a nice play, too.
Yeah, and we forget that at times that the opposition's paid to make plays as well, too. William Gay, I thought, had a pretty decent game in this one. Cockrell, I thought Cockrell did some nice things in this game. Who else are we forgetting to talk about? McCullers, I thought.
The offensive line, what'd you think?
Maybe a 7 on a scale of 1 to 10. Villanueva, I think, beat one time. Look, even Chris Hubbard got beat early on one that Ben had to get the football out to Le'Veon Bell as an extra blocker. Alejandro Villanueva had to come back and save Chris Hubbard's bacon to prevent Ben from getting sacked on one of those. So, yeah, I mean, look, I'm not going to – you're not going to see us writing a lot of articles raving about the offensive line this week. But, I mean, it was good enough. And you keep Ben – you give Ben time in the pocket, you can see what happens. And I thought we saw that in this game. James Harrison, boy, 75% of the snaps, 45 total snaps in this game. Ricardo Matthews, 7. That's one guy that I really look forward to watching on All 22 this week is Ricardo Matthews because of the amount of snaps that he played in this one. Daniel McCullers, 6 snaps. Arthur Motes, 8 snaps. LT Walton, 8 snaps. Hargrave, 12 before he left injured. And as we mentioned, Jarvis Jones had 12 snaps in this game as well, too. Are we forgetting anything?
How many did Ladarius Green get?
30-something, it seemed like. 35.
Yeah, I had him going to be – I'd said pregame we did some over-unders, and I was the clear winner, Chris Adamski just tweeted. But I had him playing at least half the snaps in this game, and, you know, you can shake hands with Xavier Grimble getting a roster spot for the rest of the games if the Steelers tight ends stay healthy because – Ladarius Green's going to get more and more
playing
time.
Yeah, it's not like
Rosie Nix and Hubbard are going to keep being involved the way they are. So Grimble, as a pass catcher tight end, has lost.
Yeah,
his job.
And he's no use to you on special teams. It'd be one thing if he was a Matt Spaeth Matt Spaeth in his prime, where he gave you more as a blocker and more as a special teams player. But that's not Grimble. Grimble is a I mean, for lack of a better words, he's a poor man's Ladarius Green, right?
At best.
And boy, you know, all the hype that there was about Xavier Grimble all through the offseason, where is all that gone now? You know, he's going to be inactive quite a bit moving forward as a healthy scratch, as long as people stay healthy in front of him.
Justin Gilbert.
Special team snaps for Justin Gilbert, 10 special team snaps for Dangerfield. Look, we said heading into this game, because of the
Robert Gold, the
Giants, the way they used 11 personnel all throughout the season, we knew we were going to see the Steelers in sub package defense quite a bit in this game, and that's exactly what happened. Are we going to see any dime down the road? The Steelers, I think, the last four or five games last year, that's when we started to see it more. I'm not so convinced. Mike Tomlin seems to be set to keep Timmons out there along with those rookies, and he really thinks those rookies are learning to not only learn their job, but learning the jobs of other players around them, and that's what, I forget how Tomlin eloquently termed that last night during the press conference, but look, you're winning, your defense is holding opposing offenses under that magical, or 16 and under, or 17 and under that Keith Butler always talks about. Your young players are contributing, and you're winning. I mean, I'm not ready to put this team, in the Super Bowl yet. I mean, I apologize for that. I mean, I think they're going to have to pass a couple more tests before this season's over. But hey, their adjusted net yards is coming down on defense, and they're starting to get some sacks. They're starting to get some turnovers, and they're not letting the opposition in the end zone. And that's the name of the game, right?
That is the name of the game. Hey, Steelers Nation, mortgage rates are currently at or near all-time lows. If you're looking to buy your first home, upgrade, downsize, invest, or purchase a vacation home, or refinance, contact Craig Oxham from First Advantage Mortgage, a lifelong Steeler fan and Pittsburgh native. Craig's a nationally recognized lender that would love the opportunity to help out our listeners. Call Craig today at 855-961-7763, 855-961-7763. Email Craig at blackandgoldlending.com. Or just apply online at www.blackandgoldlending.com. Company NMLS 2551, NMLS 320399. Illinois residential mortgage licensee, equal housing lender.
I expect Shabazz to circle back to the practice squad probably this week. We'll see how much longer Randy Bullock is needed. Mike Tomlin press conference on Tuesday. We'll be wrapping that up on the site. A lot of great content up on Steelers Depot right now from my guys. I invite you to check that out. Also, make sure you're listening to David Todd on ESPN 970 as well in the afternoons. And David and I will be back at it again on Wednesday to discuss the game a little bit more. Start previewing the game against the Buffalo Bills, which figures probably be a tighter game than many probably expect on the road this week. You can follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. You can follow David on Twitter at David M. Todd. Follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you like what we do and you want to help out the cause and you want to send us a Christmas present, you can do so by going to SteelersDepot.com, hitting that donate button in the upper right hand of the site there. A few more donations this week, folks. We really do appreciate your support. It helps with paying David a little bit more. It helps with some server costs and some podcast costs and everything that goes into that all the way around. So thank you. Happy holidays to everybody. Thanks for listening, as you always do, and we'll be back as long as I don't have a nervous system breakdown between now and Wednesday. We'll be back on Wednesday.
All right, I just put up an article on my Twitter feed today about basically writing about Pittsburgh sports fans, and I hope you'll check it out. It was I started to write about Andrew McCutchen, but the title is "The Unrealistic Beauty of Pittsburgh Sports Fans." And how demanding they are. So check that out as well. And as always, thanks for listening to The Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.